Hey everyone, Gomer here. Before we get started, we wanted to take a minute and ask for your help. Since 2014, Ascension has been creating free Catholic YouTube videos, podcasts, and articles to help people like you discover the truth and beauty of the Catholic faith.
Ascension releases 18 free videos and podcasts every week and has reached millions of people with the message of God's love. While this content is free to consume, it's not free to make. So to help offset the increasing cost of production, we're asking for your financial support to continue bringing this life-changing content to people who are searching for Christ.
If you or someone you know has personally benefited from Ascension's work, please consider financially supporting this podcast. Any amount is truly appreciated and will go to things like Ascension Presents YouTube channel, The Bible in a Year, Everyone Loves the Handsome Father Mike Schmitz, and this show. Right? You love Every Knee Shall Bow, so let's keep it going. To make a gift, please visit ascensionpress.com/support or click the link in the description of the show. Again, that's ascensionpress.com/support.
And whether you're able to support financially or not, please keep the entire Ascension team in your prayers. We thank you so much for your incredible support.
God bless.
The Eucharist is a lifelong relationship that you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Every Knee Shall Bow, your weekly Catholic podcast on evangelization and discipleship. My name is Mike Gomer Gormley, and today I am joined with Dave the Savage Van Bickle. How you doing, Dave?
Good. How did I guess that one?
I don't know, but your shirt says it, so I went with it.
Yeah, because I'm going to go savage on this day. That's the way I feel.
So you're getting aggressive.
Yeah, I'm getting aggressive. That's exactly, yeah.
Would you say that you approach most days in an aggressive, savage format?
Yeah, I mean, some days approach you in aggressive, savage format, right? But I try to be the aggressor, yes.
Okay, follow-up question. Are you ready to go door-knocking in order to make roof sales?
No, dude, I'm not in this with you. I don't know why we're bringing this.
You need to have an aggressive, can-do attitude. You need to knock on those doors, and you need to be polite.
Is that how they do it? Is it door to door?
It is door to door in a storm event.
Oh, okay, right.
In a storm event. If you have a storm event. So most people just try to generate it by, you know, having their trucks wrapped and having signage everywhere and sponsoring a Little League game. I do it by, so if everyone's listening to this, I work for a company called Petrus Roofing and Solar. I only say this because you should follow the Facebook page.
Well, I hope that we're going to get, I hope the podcast is going to get a little money from them now.
Oh, marketing money. I'm sure. Maybe the company's not doing well. No, no, but the Facebook page is entirely mine. And so
It drives me nuts.
Oh, come on. It's beautiful. You should look at the stuff I put. It is hilarious. Gomer,
I've read everything because, and I can tell. It's like
Aristotle of the asphalt shingles. Come on. That's beautiful. Who does that? Me. Me.
I don't know how I'm going to handle this new development in your life.
I'm not asking you to handle it. I'm just asking you to be supportive. This is for me. Can I just speak my truth? Gomer,
how's Lent going for you?
I would say good to quite good. Not very Lenty in terms of the suffering. Okay. It is very Lenty. So we do a family penance, which is, for the love of God, we need to calm down on YouTube. So we stop watching frivolous stuff on YouTube. The only thing we watch on YouTube is Daddy learning about roofing and solar, and that's it. Okay. So last night,
let's talk to the kids.
They actually, you know, it's funny. It's like every little kid wants to do what his mommy and daddy are doing. Yeah. And so, and every little kid's obsessed with television. So they will come up, and if I'm watching a roofing video, it's like how to make $5 million in roofing, how to be better at marketing, how to improve your website. They'll be like, cool. What are they going to talk about the shingles? And I'm like, it's coming up next, dude. Don't worry about it.
I don't know. I mean, every kid being obsessed with TV, that's an aggressive statement, but that's okay. I'm going to let you make it.
every kid who has access, unfettered access to it. You know what? I feel like I have to qualify everything around you. Your kids
well,
don't
I'm just
watch
saying,
TV.
I'm just saying that my kids often choose a book over television. So,
all right, you win, man. Mind up.
No, I'm not just. Mind I'm not up. Saying that. I'm not saying it was a good book or anything.
Is it this book right here over my shoulder, which is on sales?
No, I wish. Then I wouldn't have to worry about my retirement.
Listen, just bring them out today. Put them on a Zoom call with me. I'll get them fired up about sales. And then you'll send them out as a family. Right? Who's going to yell at your sweet children?
It'll really be like confusing to them because I regularly try to convince my oldest son to be a poor poet when he grows up. So so I just don't. I think that'd be mixed messages there.
Yeah. Yeah, we could be a poor poet who also roofs. Like, these are not contradictory things.
I wonder how long this is going to... This is terrible.
It is terrible. It is terrible. But you know what? It's become
a
bit...
for you.
It's become a bit like everything in my life.
Yeah.
It's
no,
a bit.
No, I get it. Yeah, I get it.
Well, what are you up to? What's going on with your Lent? My Lent's good. Oh, well, let me just say this. Being on carnivore and Wednesday
I can tell, by the way. You look good. I can tell.
Thank you. Thank you. If you want to hear the sob story, go listen to Catchy Foxes. But me complaining about how fat I am. But sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned the other podcast. Maybe I'm sorry.
Hipster Christians. That's what...
hipster doofuses. But Fridays got a little rough and I had to have a conversation with my wife. I've never met a woman who gets hangry more than her. You know?
I can't believe you just said that. That is awesome.
She is shockingly violent, and so her patience goes from Marian level patience to like I'm gonna kill everyone who even walks around me. So I was like, honey, listen, I know you don't like tuna and we're gonna eat it today. Could you maybe eat it for lunch instead of dinner? If that's your one meal, could your one meal be at lunchtime? Because I don't know if I could do this all day.
This is awesome.
The kids are scared.
Oh, that is a great story.
Now, I sound very confident, but I'm actually, as I'm saying this, she is holding me by the neck 6 feet off the ground
arms.
Exactly.
Your little legs are kicking. Yeah.
These are my roofing legs.
I mean, the thing is that when you did say roofing, I was imagining you up on a roof. Like,
I know, I know. I will. I'll get up there, but I won't. Ooh, I'm not going to touch shingles. I'll look at stuff. Also, here's a funny thing. So I inspired my wife to be more aggressive. I was going to say purposeful on discipling our daughters. And so we had her on the show. We had Blessed Is She. And they did a Lenten journal, and they have the same basic thing for kids and for adults. And so my wife bought the adult version, and she bought both of the kids' version. And for about 20 minutes every day, she sits down, and the girls just have time with mom. So the boys have to leave, and she sits down, and she goes through the Lenten devotional. So it's like exposing them to different ways of praying and meditating and all that stuff.
Cool.
Yeah, I like
that's it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to hear from the girls.
Yeah. She'll be like, oh, Dave, we feel like Augustine of Hippo when he was baptized by Ambrose of Milan.
I don't know.
That's how my kids stuff. That's how my kids
stuff.
It's beautiful.
Weird. We are moving on in our series on Mystagogia. No, we're not moving on. We're actually staying, right?
This is the one episode where we're staying. Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Eucharist today, continue our discussion of the Eucharist and fitting. It's the time of in our church where the bishops have called for this Eucharistic revival. We're all for that call. Like we, you know, really, should there ever be a time when there isn't Eucharistic revival? No, right? That's the source and summit of revival is Jesus in the Eucharist. And so last episode, we talked a little bit about like some of the pitfalls, and some of the things that we see that are problematic. And now we want to talk a little bit more about like the theology of the Eucharist.
Yeah.
Is that what we're going to do? Yeah.
We absolutely are, because I think for many Catholics, especially those who are going through RCIA, desirous to become a member of the church, in a way, you could say the entire faith revolves around the Eucharist, right?
Oh, yeah, and, right. So super easy to say that, right?
Right. And so the problem is sometimes I feel like the living of the Eucharist part gets a little neglected as we go through the technical side of it, like how to be a, and I hate saying this because it just sounds hippy-dippy, but how to be a Eucharistic people. But when you actually look at the writings of the church fathers, especially, was it the martyrdom of Polycarp, where he describes his martyr like they're going to set him on fire, and he's like, then let my body be like bread baking, right? Like every, you know, let my...
Several of them have that, yeah. Right?
And Ignatius, if they feed me to the lions, right. Let them, let their teeth grind me down, yeah, like wheat into, right, flying flour for the Lord. And so the Eucharistic imagery is so powerful that when you understand it, then you understand Romans 12, that I'm called to be a living sacrifice, right? I'm not to be conformed to the world, but transformed, right, into what Christ needs me to be. And it's like, wow, that's what we did with the bread, right? Like we transform it into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Christ. And so this Eucharistic theme is so central to the Catholic life that it's not for many Protestants, right? For many Protestants, someone said, why are they so good at, you know, the scriptures? And we have the Bible. We believe the same. We have the same high value, high view of scripture that Protestants do, evangelicals do. Why aren't we? And it's like, well, because so much of what we do is Eucharistic focused.
Right. Right.
That the Bible is a way of worshiping God instead of just a thing to know God. So it's funny, like we can unpack this more, but yeah, what are your thoughts?
No, I especially love, you know, you said the phrase Eucharistic people is kind of like hippy dippy, but it 100% is like what we're all about, right? You become what you eat. And there's that super mysterious, but like I love like this beautiful quote from St. Augustine where he says, and there shall be one Christ loving himself. And that is like, you know, when I go to Mass, that's what I think of. It's like, Lord, let me consume you and you consume me entirely.
Yeah.
Let me just, let us all just be one, you know, like that. I love that. I especially like this because so much of, I don't know if you feel this way, but so much of like the 90s, like when I was like a youth ministry kid and like the early 2000s, was spent on like the topic of unity, right? And kind of like unity like that was forced on a people as opposed to unity that's just natural. And I think like the natural unity that the Catholic Church takes is a Eucharistic unity, right? That we consume the Lord and the Lord consumes us. And like St. Augustine says, there shall be one Christ loving himself, right? That's what the goal is to be a Eucharistic people adoring the Eucharist and our entire life revolving around that. This is why, you know, when a family is starting to have like sort of like a conversion experience, one of the first things we tell them, and I would guess this is true for Gomer too, but one of the first things I've always told them is like, okay, the first thing you're going to give to the Lord is Sunday mornings. Like that, the Eucharistic sacrifice on Sunday is going to be the prime offering, right? And so you want to like start there and really make that a big deal.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I shifted our RCIA program to be on Sundays instead of the classes used to be on Thursday nights.
Okay.
And you're always fighting with people coming from downtown. You're always fighting with all this stuff. So I shifted it to Sunday mornings so that they would go to Mass and then come to class. And it was all supposed to be a seamless garment of RCIA instruction.
Ew. Oh my gosh, I can't believe you just said that.
Oh, for those of you who don't get it, that was some church political humor. That was the goal, right? It was Mass and class were all one thing, right?
Yeah.
And it was funny to see those who would come to class but not Mass and be like, you're missing it. But the main reason why I would do that is so when I'm sitting with them and I'm talking with every individual who is thinking about becoming Catholic, I can just simply say this. For the next year, you will come at 8:45, check in, get your assigned seat, you know, because we reserve pews for RCIA folks. Your Sunday mornings are completely owned by the church now.
Right.
Right. And I did that on purpose because I wanted them to have the mindset of, Well, I don't just come to get mass in and then dart out. I'm here, right? You know, come early, stay late. And so I was trying to get them in that habit of just saying, yes, first fruits Sunday, it's offered to the Lord.
Right. I love that. I love that idea. Another theme that I really like to introduce is, you know, since you brought up this Eucharistic idea, the Eucharistic people, is that when Pope Benedict called it the banquet of the reconciled, right? The banquet of the reconciled.
I love that,
right? Because that's exactly what's happening, is like all of us who are brought back together, right? And not just reconciled with each other, but reconciled within ourselves, right? That God has come back and put us back together in a certain sense, right? He's reformed us from that dust, right? That's exactly what's happening in the Eucharist. It's an encounter with Jesus in a very visceral way, okay? And so I don't know about you, but I'm always reminded, right, of when God makes Adam out of the clay of the ground, right? Like he gets his hands in there in a certain sense, right? Like, and you know, I think that's what Adam means, right? Is like fruitful soil or something like that. And I think in every sense, like that's what we're asking for, is like we're approaching a new moment of creation every time we receive Holy Communion, that God in a very real sense is interacting with us and reforming us, reconciling us. And so this banquet of the reconciled is like a beautiful way to look at this. I love the language that he uses there.
So me and my wife are doing Bible in a Year together, except for right now, ironically, because I'm talking to you. Actually, because I slept in. And
oh, I was wondering.
Instead of getting up at 5:45 because I was watching roofing videos till 1, I'm an idiot. So we're doing in Bible in a Year. We just finished, and I love how they did this. If you haven't done Bible in a Year, folks, you have to. It is so good. Yeah. But me and my wife sit there with our Bibles open, and we just finished Exodus and Leviticus, right? So more or less at the same time. And it is so powerful to see how like the narrative of the covenant and the law manual, the rubrics of the covenant together. But there's a curious phrase, Dave. I'm wondering if you've heard it. And I didn't know what this meant entirely until I was listening to an Orthodox priest talk about it. I can't remember the name of his book, but the phrase, a pleasing odor to the Lord, is used like 100 times. Pleasing odor to the Lord. Have you ever heard of that? I mean, Leviticus or Exodus? Or
yeah, whatever? Sure.
Yeah, and then the fat portions of the animal, like they weren't allowed to eat, they threw it into...
Right, into the fire.
Yeah. Do you know why they did that? And then incense. Why were those things like so?
No,
key?
I don't know.
So this is the fascinating thing. So, you know, in the Catholic Church, right? So you're talking about the unity stuff and church in the round. And there's all this architecture that kind of is built around different theologies, right? So if the theology is of the Eucharistic sacrifice, you tend to point everyone in that direction of the altar. If it's more about community building and unity, you tend to put people in the round. Like architecture expresses theology. People don't know that. So when we talk about this stuff, this priest was saying, so there's a war over, is the mass primarily a meal or is it a fellowship, communion fellowship, table fellowship among brethren, or is it, right, the sacrifice of Jesus? Where's the emphasis? And you could say that after Vatican Council, the emphasis was entirely and almost exclusively on the table fellowship stuff. So it's about community, it's about unity, it's about that stuff. And then on the other side, the holy sacrifice stuff was not just minimalized or reduced to a secondary characteristic, it was like demonized, right? And so you have people like Archbishop Fulton Sheen. One of the reasons why he fell out of favor for his generation of priests is because he emphasized the holy sacrifice of the mass. Right. And then the next generation of priests, they brought that back with gusto. But here's the fascinating thing. So I was talking with a pretty traditional priest, and he said, yeah, you got these idiots saying, oh, it's a meal, it's about communion. And I said, well, it is a meal because it's the Passover.
Right.
Right. It's the new Christian Passover. So it's always the sacrifice, but it's also a memorial meal. It's a sacrificial memorial. And he go, and so we were talking, and I had said to him, like, how do you say it? Like, the altar is called the table plenty of times by the church fathers and blah, blah, blah. And then he pointed out, he said, yes, but what happens at the Passover is still a sacrifice, right? So the thing that we have to do is get out of our heads that those are two competing things.
Right. That's the problem.
Right. Absolutely. But you can find the tradies almost despise community and meal. And then right. you have the kind of moderns who almost despise. But here's the fascinating thing. When you look at the phrases like burning the fat portions, using incense, and a pleasing odor to the Lord, those were phrases that was woven into the Jewish sacrificial or the Israelite sacrificial ceremonies because of the meal aspect, meaning it's pleasing. This is a banquet, right? This is
we're all coming
in here.
Yeah, yeah. You go to a restaurant and you smell the smell. Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, no one would go to a 5-star restaurant if it smelled like garbage.
Right.
Right. And so what you literally do these things, these are the whole purpose of them is to make a pleasing atmosphere so that God and man can sit down and have a meal together.
What? So this yes. is, this is from Bible in a Year?
No. Oh, so okay. No. This is from the Orthodox priest. So okay. he's talking about, because he's actually writing a book against Protestant atonement theology of penal substitutionary atonement, which tends to view like sacrifices is I put my sins on this thing, I kill this thing, therefore I don't deserve to die anymore.
Right,
put my sins on Jesus, we killed Jesus, now we don't have to die anymore.
Right.
And he's saying, no, that's not the point of a sacrifice. The point of the sacrifice was to have a meal with the Lord. And when you start going through the sacrifice, it's like this portion is reserved for the priests so that they can have, so that you have this meal together. Right. But the person who sacrificed was also supposed to eat it. As you see this in almost all, now, the one exception, obviously, is the Holocaust, where it's a whole burnt offering. Right. They take the whole animal. They burn the whole thing. It's supposed to be seen as this extravagant thing. But you still like do the things that make it. And it was when I'm preparing a talk on apostolic succession and where do we get the hierarchy in the Catholic Church and that I was going through the 70 elders of the time of Moses. And it said that Moses was with Hur and Aaron and one other person, I can't remember, and then the 70. And then they went up Sinai, and it said that the floor, that they went into the cloud, and it was, they were basically in heaven. And they said the floor was like sapphires, and you could see through it, and it was like crazy.
I remember this,
And then they ate and drank with the Lord. Yeah. And then you look at when Jesus is doing his table fellowship war with the Pharisees in Luke's gospel, and one of the Pharisees or elders looks at Jesus and says, "Blessed is he who breaks bread or who eats bread or breaks bread in the kingdom of God." And it's such a weird statement. But then Jesus goes in and says, "You will see men from the north and south and east and west sitting at table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and you will wail and gnash your teeth." And he's like, so it's this imagery of like, what is the point of all of this? And it's the banquet of the redeemed. It's sitting with God, the bridegroom, the father of my soul, and being so reconciled that now we can eat and drink in the presence of the Lord.
Well, this is awesome because I'm glad you brought this up, man. This is going to kind of wreck my week though, because when you cut a covenant, that it was like people loved it because of the big banquet. When you would cut a covenant between a neighbor or a feuding tribe or something like that, like they were all excited for the covenant banquet after that. So that makes perfect sense to me. This is awesome.
Yeah. And then you look at the fathers, one of their favorite images of the Eucharist, which St. Ambrose has the most about this. It's when Abraham joins the four kings versus the five kings.
Yep.
And there's a battle and they win. And all this stuff. And then he goes
to weird part of the Bible.
It is.
So weird. Yeah.
And then they go to a man who is the priest king of a city called Salem.
Right.
And his name is Melchizedek, which means king of righteousness.
Yeah.
And he worships the Most High. And he is a priest of the Most High.
Most High.
And he is a priest king. And so you're like, what is happening here?
Yeah.
And then Abraham gives to Melchizedek a tenth of all that he has, which is what you pay in the Levitical world. Remember, if Genesis is a prequel, these are people who now live in the Levitical world, right? The Israelites freed from bondage, and Moses is telling the prequel story, right?
Right.
He's telling their history. And so they understand giving a tenth means a priestly tithe.
Right.
And so he pays a tithe to a pagan king?
No.
And
this
you're
is
like,
what's so weird about it.
I know. And you're like, this is really crazy. Why would he do it? And then the pagan king, who is not a pagan because he worships the Most High, then blesses Abraham and has a sacrificial meal with him of bread and wine.
Yeah.
And then this is a figure. Then you see King David. The next time you really meet this guy, Melchizedek is with King David, who King David would do crazy priestly things.
He would. Yeah, I know.
And what, like him and his soldiers, Jesus brings us up. They go into the temple and they eat the bread of the presence, which is like, I know it is like when I'm reading this and like as a kid, I hear these stories, you know, do you not remember when David and his men were hungry and blah, blah, blah. And they went in and ate the bread of the presence. And you're like, okay, I don't know what that means. But then you learn about the bread of the presence. You're like, what? Like the,
like, well, when he's running, a lot of that story is spent him trying to find a place to offer sacrifice for his men. And you're like, what? Why do you not have people who do this for you? But that's not the way it worked, you know?
Right. And then when they brought the Ark of the Covenant into Jerusalem, David is wearing a seamless garment, a sheer linen ephod, which is the clothing of a priest, not the clothing of a king. And in fact, his wife hates him because of how into this, the liturgical procession, if you will, because every few steps they would sacrifice another animal.
Yeah.
And he was dancing wildly before the Ark of the Lord and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And which I just imagine you do every time you're
all
in adoration.
Like I just have like a makeshift ark that I dance before.
So you have this like crazy image, and then you have the book of Hebrews saying, like, this is who Jesus is. He's a priest in the order of Melchizedek, not the order of Levi.
Yeah.
Where there's a change in the law, there is necessarily a change in the priesthood as well. And so that phrase, which comes from Hebrews, is like, oh, Jesus is the high priest, but he's also the priest king Melchizedek, but he's all this stuff. And of all the things to offer sacrifice, bread and wine become the symbol of Melchizedek. Yeah. So do you know what all the rabbis believed who Melchizedek was?
I don't know. No. I know that there are a lot of fathers who believe that Melchizedek was a proto-incarnation of the word.
Yeah, because it says that he had no beginning and no end in the book of Hebrews.
Right.
No, all the rabbis, almost without exception, like you can look in the Babylonian Talmud and the different Targums, they believe, and if you match up the dates and take seriously the years of lifespan.
Boy. Here we go.
It's Shem, the firstborn righteous son of Noah.
Oh, I have heard this. Yeah. Okay.
So
yeah.
If the firstborn righteous son of Noah, you look at all the generations between Noah, between the Ark and Abraham, and then you add up the years. And then you look at the lifespan that it says of Shem, you realize that Shem like outlived Abraham by like 10 years or something like that. And so all of them say Melchizedek was Shem. And where is Salem? It became known as Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And he is, so the city of peace is ruled by the king of righteousness who offers a sacrifice of bread and wine.
Yeah. I love that story.
Like these layers and parallels. That's why Abraham acknowledged him as the priest king and paid the tithe to him. Like, you're my ancestor, and you're the one that still is the bearer of the covenant that now I'm taking over for you.
Yeah.
It's pretty epic. Oh,
man. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, bringing that back to what we were trying to talk about here is, right, the Eucharist is the encounter, right? I mean, this is what, when the catechism says source and summit, and it kind of gets overused, like, it is everything, right? Because it's Jesus, because it's him. In every sacrament, we have an encounter with God. But in this sacrament, we have a totally different kind of encounter with God. And so what we do is we completely and totally orient our lives to it because it is the one that doesn't really end, okay? Like in heaven, we're going to be participating in an even more fruitful way, right? In an even more, I don't know how you say it, like less sacramental, more, I don't know.
You're about to say more real.
Yeah, I hate that. I'm not going to get in trouble though. Yeah. Like this isn't going to end, right? The Eucharistic sacrifice doesn't end. It's what we'll be doing in heaven, right? Is entering more deeply into the mystery of God.
Yeah, and it's what we said last week, that when you think about the Eucharist, you should think about it in the terms of what happened on Calvary and what happens in heaven. Always those two things. So sacred art either embodies the Eucharist or the sacrifice of Christ on the cross, right? Or so the closer you get to the altar, that's the symbolism. That's why there's like a million crucifixes in more traditional churches. Or it's heaven. Think of the Sistine Chapel. Think of the wall, the second coming of Christ, the final judgment, and all of this depiction. What you're saying is like, what we will do for eternity is be at banquet with the Lord.
Right.
Right. What we will do, but there will be no sacramental veil, right? Where
it's
Christ,
no sign. It's
yeah, it's
him.
It's yeah. it. Right. Yeah. And right. infinitely that, right. Infinitely yeah. that it never grows old and never gets boring. It's not just like you're going to an ordinary at church where we sing all 15 of the, of the all 15 verses of the hymn. It is perfect and everlasting. I love it. Right. So you have you like when was the last time you read the Book of Revelation, like cover to cover?
I mean, not that long ago. It would have been in the last few months for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So that's weird. Mine was last week. So just kidding. Lame. No, but when you look at the Book of Revelation, I literally just said this to like in a funny conversation with a Protestant friend of mine, where I was like, he said like. He comes from a like if you were to say low church, his would be lower, right?
Oh wow, okay.
And I said, you know, no liturgy, just literally a couple prayers, a couple songs, yeah. and the priest or the pastor preaches. He goes, it's so pagan what you guys do. It just looks like that. And I said, have you ever read the Book of Revelation?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. And I said, are there altars in the Book of Revelation? Yeah. Is there incense? Yeah. Is there singing? Yeah. Right. Like you just keep going. It's like, right. Is there silence? Yeah. Is there? And you're like, the whole thing about Catholicism is the Book of Revelation almost became like a blueprint for the Mass. Yeah. And he's like, how? I was like, the first half is the liturgy of the word, where the breaking open of the scrolls. And then the second half culminates in the wedding feast of the Lamb. And you're like, and note that the Lamb is standing as one slain. And he's standing on an altar in right. front of a throne. Like, isn't that amazing that heaven has an altar? Okay, so just keep thinking that this is a sacrificial system. Your church doesn't have an altar.
Right.
See, but that matters. You do altar calls without altars. Right? We need to understand that this is what Christ is drawing us into.
You know, actually, you know, because now you've totally wrecked me with this whole feast thing. But going back to Melchizedek, right, the king and priest, okay, you know, when he sees the lamb, he says it's the lion of the tribe of Judah, and then when you see it, it's like it's actually not some big lion, it's a lamb once slain, you
know? Yeah,
I love it.
You know, okay, I mean? So how Dave, does this affect people's walk with the Lord on Sunday?
Yeah, okay, so I think that what's important to realize is that like our faith, right, which is what the liturgy of the word is meant to like inspire, right? To bring up our faith put into this sacrament is something that is going to change you. Like, right. This is going to be something that we consume the Lord and the Lord consumes us and we walk away different. We walk away changed. This is why we're so serious about who should receive and what to think before you receive and why you should understand who you're receiving, right? This is why people will make comments about Catholics. Well, we went to their funeral or a Catholic funeral and they told us not to receive communion and they get offended. It's because we believe absolutely what we just talked about, that this is Jesus Christ and that you don't just approach that willy-nilly, right? You don't just approach the altar just with any other intention than to walk away change, to be at the banquet of the reconciled and to celebrate the resurrection right at that banquet. And so I would say what's important is that you can't swim in the shallow end for the Eucharist, right? Like if you are, let's say somebody's listening right now and they're actually using this as a mystagogia, right? You don't think there's a list of things that like, okay, I need to know these things and then I'll be good with the Eucharist. Like, no, the Eucharist is a lifelong relationship that you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into, and the infinite mystery that Gomer talked about starts now, right? Like there's not, especially when you were talking about like the differences between the sacrifice and the meal, you have to be able in Catholicism in general, but specifically for the Eucharist, you have to be able to hold those two things together.
Yeah,
because that's the way it works. Like this is the deep end, and that's where you want to be, is in the deep end, drowning in it,
Yes. You know, when we receive Holy Communion, you think of going forward to the altar. And this is something that we tried to do in our catechesis for in-pew communion things. You know, the USCCB has, like, for Catholics who receive, what if you're not Catholic, what do you do? You know, blah, blah, blah. And they're nice little, it's a great description of what you should do. But I decided to expand the theology of it, and so that people could have it in the pews. It just makes sense. And so one of the things that I wrote is how to receive communion in a worthy manner. And that notion of worthy comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 27 to 29, where he talks about not receiving in an unworthy manner. And he says, this is why some of you have gotten sick and even some of you have died, right? Because if you eat it in an unworthy manner, you are eating and drinking judgment upon yourself, and you are guilty of the very body and blood of our Lord. These are St. Paul's words. And so, and this is one chapter after he says in 1 Corinthians 10, is the bread that we break not a participation in the body of Christ? Is the cup that we drink not a participation in the blood of Christ? Right? So he is right there with Catholic theology that this is the body and blood of Jesus and is our participation in that. And then he says, so do it in a worthy manner. Okay, well, what does that mean? When you are walking down the aisle to go to the altar, you are processing. Think of it as a pilgrimage procession. And so as you walk, and most churches are still built in the shape of a cross, so you're within the cross. So even the architecture, again, screams this out. You're within the cross. You're going forward to heaven, which is what the sanctuary is meant to be, right? It's not all criticisms aside, it's meant to represent heaven. And we go forward in pilgrimage to heaven. So your intentions are not, hey, Bill, good to see you. I missed you in the handshake part. I'm going to shake you. I see people do that all the time. We're like climbing over people as they're walking down the aisle and peace signing and stuff. It's like, no. Game face on. You've already been in the pew praying to receive our Lord. Now you're walking forward in procession. And then you go before heaven and receive from the priest or the deacon, who is the symbol of Christ. Right? And that imagery of you are receiving Christ at the altar, this is deeply Book of Revelation stuff. Then when you return to your pew, you are supposed to be flooded, like Dave said, immersed in the mystery of our Eucharistic King, right? Yeah. Immersed in that. And so you go and you kneel down. And usually what I try to do, I usually have some set prayers that I pray of a prayer book, that because my mind is wandering. Right. And sometimes I do it. And then sometimes I'll just close my eyes and I will just contemplate the mystery that Christ is within me. Like the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. I'll say things like, I am the true vine and you are the branches. You know, abide in me and I will abide in you. That's what we're doing right now. Right. If you shouldn't receive Holy Communion because you're in the state of mortal sin, don't do it. You're eating and drinking judgment on yourself. But he makes us worthy. So we go and we receive sacramental forgiveness and then we receive Holy Communion. And then I pray and I do this stuff. I usually end with, like, if I can sense that they're done, all the people flittering about are done with communion and they're done with purification of the cups and stuff, then I will pray usually a Hail Mary, or I'll just turn my thoughts to Mary so that I can be a living tabernacle. So that when I walk out those doors, I'm bearing Jesus into the world, right? So you keep this. It's weird, but this maternal imagery, like gets incorporated into it. So this time is not, I'm entitled to the Eucharist, gimme, gimme, gimme. You know, I didn't prepare myself at all. You know, Jesus says, he has a great line where he tells the parable of the banquet, and the king brings in people from the highways and the hedges in order to come in. And then he's so mad, like he wants to fill this place. Yet he's still willing to kick people out who are not prepared with the wedding garment. Friend, where's your wedding garment? I don't have one. Out with the wailing and the gnashing of teeth, right?
Right.
And it's like, this is us. This is our preparing, right? The wearing the nice clothes is a symbol of I'm prepared. I'm prepared to be here. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Amen.
Okay. Before we take a break, I want to tell you something exciting. An exciting offering from Ascension to help you go deeper in your faith, the Ascension app.
By downloading the Ascension app today, you'll receive access to the entire text of the Great Adventure Bible and the Catechism right on your phone. With the Ascension app, you can easily cross-reference biblical passages with catechism references, get plain language explanations for cryptic texts, and search both books without turning hundreds of pages.
Oh, who wants to turn hundreds of pages? Gross. Let the robots do it for us. The app also includes both the Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year podcast, which is how I listen, daily mass readings and video reflections. Oh, I'm on three of those. The entire text of the Great Adventure Bible and Catechism. And let me tell you that I pulled it out during mass to read the readings, and there was a great article that I did a little explanation. Loved it. Full audio Bible read aloud by none other than Father Mike Schmitz, who reads so passionately. I love it. Ascension's award-winning Bible studies, answers to the most frequently asked Bible questions, and so much more.
This app was created to help you understand the faith like never before and experience the peace that comes from deepening your prayer life and knowledge of God. Get started today for free by searching Ascension app in the App Store or texting EKSB to 71391. To receive a link to download. Again, that's EKSB to 71391. God bless.
The Old Testament makes up over half of the Bible, and yet it can be very difficult to understand. I'm Andrew Swofford.
And I'm Jeff Cavins, and we, along with a couple of our fellow Bible scholars, wrote a Catholic Guide to the Old Testament just for that purpose.
Through A Catholic Guide to the Old Testament, you will become better acquainted with the author, main characters, important points of each book of the Old Testament to bring more clarity to the Old Testament.
And it even uses the color-coded Bible Timeline Learning System, which is also used for the Bible in a Year podcast with Father Mike Schmitz and myself.
And one great thing about this book is not only does it take you to the there and then, it also shows you how the New Testament uses each book of the Old Testament and how each book of the Old Testament is used in Catholic tradition.
Understanding each of the individual books of the Old Testament will help you possess a deeper knowledge of the Bible and a greater view of the big picture of God's plan of salvation, which ultimately brings you closer to God.
You can order today at ascensionpress.com/Old Testament.
And we're back. Hope you loved that Ascension ad. I love, to be honest, I use the Ascension app every day. I use the Ascension app every day. I have the premium version that has access to all the Bible studies, and you can download it. And I got on a plane and crushed Jeff Cavins's entire, almost the entire, I would say 80% of the biblical, of the Bible timeline on double speed in flying. So I was in an airport for 2 hours. I flew for 4 hours and then was waiting for my wife to pick me up. And in that time frame, I got through salvation history from the divided kingdom onward. It was awesome. Yeah. So Dave, let's wrap up. What we want to do is talk about Eucharistic devotion, personal devotion for like when you go to mass.
Yeah. I think for me, there's three things that I like to incorporate. Okay. The first is this adoration outside of mass. It creates such a longing, such an unbelievable longing, right? For this. Number two, Stop.
Dave accidentally put his thumb up and our thing generates. What was that?
I don't know what it is. I have no idea.
It generates
really
these little animated.
It's the second time it's happened.
Animated characters.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry.
It distracted me. Please keep going.
No, the first is adoration because it generates that longing outside of the Eucharist, right? It has that way of like just building that hunger inside of you. The second is I use two prayers for like my pre-communion devotional prayer. And the first is the daily prayer of St. Bonaventure. I use that one.
Oh, very cool.
And then I use the prayer before communion by St. Thomas Aquinas, which is, you know, just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And I continue that prayer of St. Thomas Aquinas as I walk up. Like I can, I keep saying like in my, like clothe my nakedness, it, you know, enrich my poverty, all of those things. I keep saying them over and over again. And then the last thing I would say is that afterwards, it's like the most intimate time, right? And so I often just really try to just sit and just say, Lord, this time is yours. And I try my best to kind of listen, you know, and I practice just that active listening with the Lord and ask him special favors at that time and say, Lord, I'd really love to be different in this way. I'd really love to change in this way. And know that his presence there is so close and so profound that it really helps to add these devotions because, as we know, faith activates grace, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So my advice is to basically do what Dave said, but be intentional about it. Get a prayer book that has prayers in it that you will pray. Good, solid prayers written by saints. So I use the Saint Gregory prayer book. Now that's an ordinariate thing, but anyway, obviously it's the prayers of the church. Anyone can do it. They have prayers before Mass, and they have prayers before communion, and then after communion and after Mass. I love it because when I go in there and I get into the Mass and I'm sitting with my family and I kneel down to pray, I'm trying to get my head on a swivel. Now, I've already done, you know, me and my wife, we'll listen to Bishop Barron do his Sunday homily. We go through the readings. So our brains are switched on. Like, we're already in a receptive mood. And then I want to murder my kids by the time we get to the church. So maybe that mood's diminished a little bit. No, I'm just kidding. But then you're in there, and I kneel down and I pray a prayer of St. Ambrose before Mass, where he calls Jesus the true bishop. Have you ever heard of this prayer?
Yeah, sure.
It's awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. So I use that prayer, and usually I'll pray the St. Thomas Aquinas prayer before Mass begins. And then when it's before communion, there is one beautiful prayer by St. John Chrysostom. And when you read it, you're like, every three words is like another scriptural allusion. And I pray that when the pew in front of me stands up to go to communion, that's when I am praying through that prayer. So as I'm getting up to walk, I'm thinking of these prayers, these words. And then afterwards, I generally will read the prayer of St. Bonaventure after communion. I mean, that's an epic, you know, you want to talk about having a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. It does not get more intense than the prayer after Holy Communion of St. Bonaventure. Yeah. So what I'm saying is for you to print these off or to handwrite them or to get a prayer book and make that be your go-to Mass companion.
Yeah, I love that. I love that idea. You know, it really makes a big difference when you put a little bit into Mass, like what comes out and the changes in your life. And so just remember that you're encountering the living God. There's no reason to walk away the same.
Amen. 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 All right, y'all. God bless.